And yet, I'd like to suggest a need to be humble, not just humble before God, but also before man. And what do I mean with that is the following. In our attempt to defend our dearly held values, it just might be a good idea to humbly ask whether our arguments are convincing also to those we're trying to convince. For example, does the institution of homosexual marriage really lead to imminent destruction of society? As a strongly believing individual, I would say so. That is one of the conclusions I take from the story of the Great Flood. The theme of sexual perversion is very strongly present. However, I also know that even my own congregants, a community of faithful, would not easily accept this, far less those who do not affiliate with us. So is the argument convincing to a lapsed faithful, be he Jew or Christian? Is the argument convincing to someone who defines himself as not belonging to any particular religious denomination? It's a question we must face as we formulate our arguments. My second word of caution is that we are not fighting merely some legal proposals or instances of ethical lapses, but a pervasive cultural shift. The legal changes relating to marriage and the family are not themselves the root problems, but the symptoms of deeper cultural changes. To fight these trends, conferences do not suffice. Rather, we must become significant cultural actors. Let me explain a little bit what I mean by that. The noted sociologist and cultural anthropologist Clifford Geertz is a noted example of someone who tried to define what is culture. I know if you'd ask a 19th century Jew what is culture, he would talk about the high arts, high culture. But nowadays, we've come to the recognition that culture is a much more expansive notion. Culture includes not only the high arts, but also the popular arts, and even more than that, it includes the kind of expression and idioms we use, how we greet each other, when we smile, when we don't, and I'll illustrate that with a very cute little story. When I was in graduate school, I studied next to my rabbinic studies. I also studied for a master's of business administration, and I took a class in international negotiations. And so one of the sessions was dedicated to cultural differences. It was a French fellow in class who, as we were all invited to speak about our experiences of interesting cultural dysfunctions, reported on how in France, you don't always smile. Smiling is something reserved for when you truly want to express sympathy. Depending on your point of view, you might say they're being truthful or they're really not generous with their smiles. It's a cultural question we may ask. But anyway, he reports, when you go to a club and you see a young lady and you smile to her and she smiles back, it means something. And you find yourself in New York and you go to a club and you smile at someone and she smiles back, she was just being courteous. It doesn't mean anything. So cultural differences in that sense mean something, and I would say they are part of culture. All that is culture. It's a whole big package. And if we want to have an impact on a society where, as I will demonstrate briefly, where key institutions that we're talking about have taken on a very, very different cultural valence, we must be conscious of the need to become cultural actors so that we can impact this culture. We must thus produce culture which offers an alternative understanding of humanity. It's actually, I wouldn't call it alternative, it is a genuine ancient and timeless understanding of humanity, sadly I must report nowadays that it's an alternative. This also requires understanding what makes literature, film, visual and performing arts attractive, and why in recent generations the arts have, in the West at least, been rather associated with breaking cultural norms, and why art consumers find that attractive, so that we can produce attractive, valuable, and inspiring cultural arts. After these words of caution, I would like to turn to the topic of marriage in the popular culture, and then segue into the question of how to deal with homosexuals in religious communities, whereby since Rabbi Goldschmidt has already covered quite a number of points I wanted to raise, I will vote in favor of what you said. I will just add a little, as we say in Hebrew, nofach mishali, or in English, my two cents. I have here a page I photocopied this morning from Newsweek magazine. In the back, they review some movies very briefly, so please, if you can spread this around to each side. These are two of the six or eight movies reviewed in the issue, briefly reviewed, and I think they demonstrate how marriage nowadays is experienced in popular culture. I start with mentioning, let's read these two blurbs. First, there's a movie entitled Paria, which should be in theaters as of December 28th in the United States. Anyway, this is a story of a 17-year-old black lesbian called Alike or something of this, yeah? She tags along to a gay bar with her butch, experienced friend, and then dutifully and joylessly ditches her baseball cap and puts on earrings on the way home, where she faces a stern, shrill mother and a loving but philandering father. Reese, accomplished first feature, flirts with the generic in the family scenes. They feel a bit movie-ish, but there's nothing ordinary about the luminous Oduye performance. She takes us on Alike's emotional roller coaster, from hope to heartbreak, panic to pride, without a false step. So far as the text I read, we see right away a couple of cultural memes. There is our heroine, and she is lesbian. She has parents, the heterosexual couple. How are they portrayed? A shrill mother and a loving but philandering father. The image that is implanted in the mind of the movie goer is gay relationship. It works. It's nice. She's exploring and finding fulfillment. And we talk about her emotions, heartbreak, even when it does not work well. She feels heartbreak, we connect emotionally with her, and we have the traditional family's appearance where we only have negative things to say about the character of the mother and the behavior of the father. That is marriage in popular culture. We have another one here, the next one entitled Young Adults. Director Jason Reitman and writer Diablo Cody, who made the huggable hit Juno, have reunited. Do not expect more of the same. This is a far more daring and prickly affair. Its narcissistic anti-heroine, Mavis Gerry, sets off on a desperate mission to her hick hometown to win back her now married high school sweetheart, Buddy. You can read the rest. I think this is enough to make my following point, which is even more basic. Whereas one might think, as Frank Sinatra once sang, love and marriage, you can't have one without the other. I'll spare you the musical performance. But whereas this was once upon a time the standard, here we are discovering marriage in the way of love. It stands in the way. And she wants to reconquer her sweetheart, love of her heart, who is married, and this is the theme of the movie. Now, why do we get there? How come this is acceptable art? This is something people find funny, touching, moving, you name it. I think the root of the issue, to reach the root of the issue, we have to go back a couple of decades. Until the sexual revolution, where a sexual relationship very often meant a child or several children, from the time when we have divorced having children from consummating marriage, we have quickly evolved into a situation whereby love is supposed to be the goal, a goal of its own. God has implanted in us very profound, deeply felt emotions of love, and has made the consummation of the of intimacy something that is inherently pleasurable for a reason. In other words, these are tools, very profound tools, that can, like a hammer, be used to construct something or to knock in someone's head. As long as we consider these tools a medium to arrive at something, we have one model of marriage. Once these take on a life of their own, marriage may come in the way. So now we discover this actress playing Mavis Gerry wants to conquer her or reconquer her high school sweetheart who is married, and his marriage stands in the way, but that's not such a major ethical problem anymore. That there is another woman who's going to suffer, well, you know, she's not part of the cast, at least not of the cast of main characters. This new role of the notion of love and sexual fulfillment is, I believe, at the core of the challenges we face when we're dealing with homosexuality, and particularly with homosexual marriage. Marriage now is here to serve love as opposed to love to serve marriage. And in order to get out of this, I think we have to go back to the biblical descriptions of marriage, and not just of marriage, of family relationship, of the national entity, and of many other types of relationship, and try to discover what the Bible means with a relationship. And we find the descriptions of love. Love is a word that comes up. The patriarch Jacob loving Rachel. There are other scenes describing love all over the Bible. However, I think that marriage is primarily not love, but a covenant. It's two people deciding to build something together, to get into the boat together in order to arrive at something greater than any one of them alone could achieve. Seen from that perspective, when the love isn't as powerful as it once was, when it abates, it's a challenge. It's something to work on, but it's not a reason to throw away the marriage. Likewise, when we present marriage as being about a covenant in order to bring about a family, it is no longer obvious that just because you have two men or two women who declare that they deeply love each other, never mind if, you know, the scientific side, whether it's convincing or not, when you have these people, we no longer, society no longer needs to be expected to bless this kind of love with marriage, because marriage is not necessarily, it's not there to serve love. Marriage is there to strengthen, it's a covenant. In other words, I suggest that there is a major gap between the marriage in popular culture and marriage as it would appear from biblical values. And if we want to influence that, we have to first recognize that the problem hasn't started today. It started a couple of decades ago with these descriptions, if not longer. I could bring examples from literature, although I have to limit myself time-wise, but I would suggest, if you want a very long but quite interesting read, just read the Alexandre Dumas trilogy which starts with the Three Musketeers. It's a very nice example of a society gone haywire, particularly when it comes to marital values. And it will show that whereas the process has accelerated since the 1960s, it hasn't begun today. It started a while ago. And if we want to attack this, we have to be aware of this, and we have to provide an alternative, more wholesome view of marriage that can help couples go through all kinds of difficulties in life. From the Jewish perspective, divorce is something that exists. It's legal. Sometimes couples cannot stay together. But it doesn't mean that it has to be our gut reaction whenever a certain challenge arises that, okay, you can't make it together, let's just, you know, split. Rather, we have to provide couples with the tools necessary to survive that. And once we can bring into the popular consciousness this different view of marriage, I believe we will be more successful at explaining to people why we must not necessarily tie one societal trend with another, and why the definition of marriage and the family should rather remain a traditional one. Thank you very much. I had promised I was going to say something about homosexual marriage. My link is, as I mentioned, I agree with the fact that we must welcome the people, the sinners, not the sin, for many, many reasons that would bring me far beyond my allotted time. In order to be convincing towards these people, yeah, not just towards the wider world, but convincing towards these people that we welcome them, but we don't accept their lifestyle, and we're not going to celebrate it. I think, again, it's very important that we recognize, we struggle with, we must struggle theologically with the scientifically and theologically with their challenges in order to show, to genuinely care. But also, this view of marriage is not something just for the world outside. It's something that internally we want to transmit, so that when we are called upon to discuss this with people privately, we're actually credible. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Holger.